Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This week, we have the teen edition of Fascinating Ohio. We're introducing you to three teenagers doing amazing things. We're going to start with Carson Paris, a 14-year-old incoming sophomore at Pickerington Central High School. He's been competing in robotics for his school district since the fourth grade. And in his time with the program, he's attended the VEX Robotics World Championship in Dallas, Texas, twice, including this past season, where his team joined more than 800 teams from around the world and finished 28th in their division. Welcome to All Sides, Carson.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So what first got you interested in robotics?
So when I was in fourth grade, the Pickerington School District offered a club that took time out of your school day to do robotics. And I was really interested in that, and it was Lego robotics. Mm-hmm. And when I was, you know, younger, like first, second, third grade, I was really interested in Legos and robots. So yeah. Together, the club, it just hooked me, kind of. And then that year of fourth grade, that whole year I was in that club. And the next year, fifth grade, they offered a club, another club, that was VEX Robotics, which was a little more advanced, but and where you actually competed in competition. And that was kind of like the setting point. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this.
So congratulations on making it to the World Championship. That's an amazing accomplishment. What was that experience like going to Dallas to compete at this high level?
It was amazing. Seeing all the teams that you follow online and meeting all the new people or the people that you see that you meet with from the local competitions and seeing how they progressed through their year, it's just incredible. And then the atmosphere there with the crowd and even the students there is just amazing to see them.
And there's actually people from all over the world. People from other countries?
Yeah, like I think there's 50 countries just about there. Mm.
So you were 28th place in your division. Your yes. team was. What division was it? Tell me, like, how does it? What kind of division is your team in?
So we were in the Innovate division. It sorts by. So we have a number. It is 6741R, and there's numbers that range from 10 all the way down to 99999. Mm-hmm. And so 10 would be in the first division, and then it goes down in numerical order. And there's 10 divisions. And then those divisions kind of compete out into a tournament. And then all the division champions compete against each other to finally decide a world champion.
Yeah, someone who wants to follow along with your robotics career, your team has an Instagram account called 6741 Robotics. What is that number just randomly assigned? Does the number mean anything?
No, it doesn't really mean anything.
It's just your number.
Some teams' number means stuff. Our number doesn't mean anything specific.
Okay, so your team, you're from Pickerington Central. How yes. many students are on a team?
It usually ranges from 3 to 6. Mm-hmm. There's 4 or 5 jobs that each team needs, and it's preferable to have one person for each job to have, you know, the best time mm-hmm. management. And so 4 to 5 is preferable, but, you know, 3 and 6 is doable.
Yeah. So before we explain those jobs, let's back up for a moment. Can you describe the robot that you're building and working with? Because maybe for someone who's listening who has never been to a robotics competition, I looked at your Instagram account, so I know what the robot looks like. Can you describe what it looks like?
Yeah, of course. It's kind of like a Rector set, just a little more complex. Mm-hmm. VEX has its own guidelines that a team has to follow when building their robot. The robots consist of aluminum and metal and various plastics, and every robot has a base with wheels and motors, and then the specific amount of wheels or motors determines how fast the robot can go, its maneuverability, mm-hmm. and you know, how quick it can turn and stuff like that. And then on top of the base, there's various mechanisms that also use motors or pneumatic pistons, and the mechanisms are like, you know, maybe an arm to move things around that are on the playing field, or an intake to scoop those things up that are also on the playing field. And the pistons, there's also, you know, you need air tanks for those pistons. So, you know, depending on how many pistons you have, each team has one or two of those air tanks. And then also a brain and also a lot of sensors on the robot, and then wires to wire all of those from the brain to the motors or to the sensors.
Now, is Pickerington High School buying all these pieces and parts for you?
Yes, they are.
So they provide it all?
We do have to do some fundraising to get help us out a little bit, but yeah.
Okay. And every robot doesn't look the same. You're not all building the same robot.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah. So you put your own spin on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course. Of course. So, and then the idea in the competition is that your robot has to do certain tasks, right? Do you pick the tasks or does the competition pick the tasks?
No. So every year, Vex has a game reveal at the World Championship, and it's a new game every year. Mm-hmm. It's the same field, which is 12 feet by 12 feet, just different objects on the field. So it changes every year.
Okay. So tell me about the game last year. What game was your robot trying to do?
It was called High Stakes, and there were these rings on the field. They were about an inch tall and I think 7 inches in diameter. Mm-hmm. And your robot was supposed to intake them and place them on a triangular-shaped goal, mobile goal. There were five of those around the field. And then on the perimeter of the wall, on one on each, like the center of each wall, there were stationary goals that your robot could also score on to gain points.
So you had to program the robot to pick up these rings and put them where they needed to be.
Yes,
right?
We did.
Okay. And I saw a video of your team doing this with the robot. Are you doing it alone, or are you competing directly with other teams? Like, are there multiple robots in the arena?
There's two different types of competition. One is in the tournament match, where you are paired with another team, and you're against another pairing of two teams, and it's really a race to score the most amount of points. Mm-hmm. And each match is 2 minutes. At the beginning, there's a 15-second autonomous period where your robot operates by itself, and the goal is to score as many points as possible. And then the team or the alliance that scores the most points in that autonomous period is awarded a specific amount of point bonus, and you know, that's really helpful towards towards the final, especially in the games where it's like low scoring. And then in the driver control, which is a minute 45, the drivers of each team try to score as many points as possible.
Yeah, this is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and today we have Fascinating Ohio, the teen edition. We're talking with local teens who do amazing things. With us now is Carson Paris, a 14-year-old incoming sophomore at Pickerington Central High School, and he recently traveled to Dallas to compete with his robotics team in the World Championships. So we mentioned this earlier, robotics team members have different responsibilities. There's a driver, a builder, a programmer, and a notebooker. Which of those responsibilities do you like best?
I like to build a lot. A responsibility as a builder, and it's kind of its own role in itself, is a CADder, and CAD stands for computer aided design. Mm-hmm. So before you begin the building of your robot, you create a 3D model of it in, I use an application, it's called Fusion 360, and I do that on a computer, and I import the various parts that we use on our robot and make an ideal perfect world robot that we would like to have. And then we have that 3D model to go off of to make building just really easy and simple.
It sounds like you've come a long way from Legos.
Yes.
Now, I understand what the driver is because you explained the field, and now you just explained the builder. So then the programmer, is that actually telling the computer, did you call it a brain, what to do?
Yeah. They type the code into a software. Vex has its own software. Mm-hmm. And then you upload it directly to the controller or to the brain, and it outputs that to the robot and allows it to move by itself, or allows it to move using the controls on the controller to do different tasks or actions.
Okay. And then the last role is a notebooker. What is that? I don't even know what that is.
So it's not required, but it's recommended if you want to win awards. It's what helped us win our 11 awards in our season this past season. Mm-hmm. The notebookers use a engineering notebook and really just jot down everything, the design process for the robot, your brainstorming and all your ideas that come out of your mind, you jot down in the notebook, and it really helps you win awards, and the judges look at it, and that's what they base most of their opinions off of when selecting who deserves these awards that they give out at competitions.
Oh, okay. So you can win a competition with points, but you can also, can you win special judges awards?
Yeah. So there's obviously the tournament where the tournament champions win the competition, and then the special judged awards are given based off of your notebook, and then some of the awards are based off of your performance. They take that into it too, but also your interview, which a panel of judges comes around for your first interview and tells you to talk about your robot and talk about how you implement your game strategy and talk about your notebook. And, you know, if they really like you or they believe you're, you know, a top contender for a specific award, you'll get a second interview where you will go a lot more in depth about that. And that's how they decide who wins these awards.
Now, your team is obviously very good at this if you made it to the World Championships, but have you ever had a robot completely crash and burn?
Robots break. At Worlds, the front part of our robot, our intake that we use to scoop up the rings, broke a couple times.
Aww.
And but it's an easy fix, you know. You can screw stuff back on or place an axle back in place pretty easily. But nothing like severe that, you know, caused us to have to rebuild our whole robot and take it apart and put it back together.
What is your favorite part of robotics? What makes you enjoy it and want to keep doing it?
I'd say the people, honestly. Yeah. My teammates, the other people from the Pickerington School District that are in robotics, and some other teams that I see everywhere from Ohio or from, you know, across the country or from other countries.
Do you think you'll continue in robotics in the future?
I believe so. I would like to, yes.
Do you know if do colleges have robotics teams?
They do. It's another program that runs through VEX. It's called VEXU. There's kind of different guidelines, but it's the same game as VEX VRC, which is the high school version. Not all of them have them, but there's a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think this will lead to what you might study in college or lead to a career? I mean, do you want to be some sort of engineer or programmer?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's even that, like the building and the programming, obviously that's a lot of careers that have options. But, you know, the interview skills, that's just life skills that you learn from robotics that are useful everywhere.
You can talk to me today because you have to talk to all of these judges at competitions all the time. One last thing I wanted to ask you about is your robotics team was recently recognized by the Pickerington City Council for your performance in the World Championships. What did that feel like to get a city proclamation?
It was incredible. Like, you know, all the work that you put in that whole year, outcomes to that. It's just amazing to see that your hard work, what it results to.
And you said that at the World Championships, they unveil the game for the next year. So you know right now, what do you already have plans? Does your team already have plans for that?
Yeah, we already have, you know, sketches and ideas. And we've already seen, you know, teams across the world, their ideas through social media or through messages, you know,
it's not a secret. You don't try to keep it a secret.
I mean, some teams do, but we prefer to, you know, show our robot out there.
Okay. Well, and so again, if people want to follow along with this award-winning robotics team, you can follow on Instagram. It's 6741 Robotics.
Yes. And then our team also has their specific Instagram. It's 6741 Redacted.
Okay.
And then we also have a website. It's picktigers.com. And you can follow along there.
All right. Well, Carson Paris, 14-year-old incoming sophomore at Pickerington Central High School, a member of the robotics team that competed at the World Championships. Thank you for being here, Carson.
Thank you so much.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides. Next, we're going to hear from a teen who is also a golf caddy and is learning professionalism and networking skills while on the golf course. That's coming up from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And this hour is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This week, we have the teen edition of Fascinating Ohio. We're introducing you to three teenagers doing amazing things. Mikaiah Phillips is a senior this fall at Cristo Rey Columbus High School, a private Catholic high school in downtown Columbus. She has participated in the Western Golf Association Caddy Academy for the past two summers. Welcome to All Sides, Mickey.
Hi, thank you so much.
So before joining the Caddy Academy, which is fun to say, Caddy Academy, before joining that, did you have an interest in golf?
To be so honest, no, I didn't know much about golf. I remember when I was younger, my mom, she bought an Xbox, and one of the games that she did buy was a golf simulation.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what I was playing. I was only like 8 years old.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize till later on when I got accepted into Caddy Academy, when I started caddying, the fact that it was that golf simulation. So even though I could correlate it back to that game, I never really had a full interest in golf or a full even knowing really what golf was about.
So what drew you to Caddy Academy? Was it just, did someone tell you, hey, you should apply to this? Or how did you find out about it?
So at Cristo Rey, Caddy Academy, Western Golf Association, what they do is I go to a national school, if that makes sense. So mm-hmm. Cristo Rey is one school amongst about 40 Cristo Reys. And Columbus is one of them, and they were opening a Ohio branch in 2023. What WGA, Western Golf Association, decided to do was they contacted our Columbus school, and they were like, hey, can you choose about 10 freshmen that shows like leadership, are well in academics, things of that sort. So I was chosen by my teachers to apply for the WGA, and I was one of the first girls, one amongst six girls that were chosen to open up the Ohio branch for Caddy Academy.
Okay. So when someone came up to you and said, we want you to apply to this, you were like, oh, thank you for calling me a leader. But did you know it was like carrying around golf clubs?
No, I didn't really. Yeah. Actually, I didn't even know that it was a thing. I didn't even know what we were doing.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, it's for the Evans Scholarship, which is like a Fulbright scholarship. We'll probably get into that later.
Yeah.
But I was like, what do they do? And then they sent us the website. And then I realized that I was going to be carrying golf clubs. And I was like, oh, okay. I think I already applied.
Yeah, you're like, sure, why not? I'll carry these golf clubs. So tell me, what does a typical day look like for you? Are you on the golf course every day?
Yes, I am just about. I'm usually on the golf course about 5 to 6 days a week. The typical day for me personally, you can have AM loops or PM loops. Me personally, I have a lot of afternoon loops. So it is hot in summer and sweaty inside mm-hmm. the day usually. I am a double bagger, meaning I carry two bags or two golf bags, one on each shoulder, one on my left, one on my right, and I'm caddying for two golfers at one time. The typical day could look like waking up. You definitely want to eat because you're in the hot summer sun carrying a bag that's a workout. After that, you go to the golf course. You meet your golfer. You say hello, say your name. They might ask you what high school you go to, what are you caddying for, like if you're just caddying as a summer job or if you're caddying specifically for the Evans Scholarship. And they'll ask you so much more about your school year. Me personally, they ask about our work-study program that we do, and I tell them that every year. And you pretty much just have fun and caddy, like, with mm-hmm. your golfers. It's pretty fun, I think.
And so carrying two bags, you must have gained a lot of strength recently.
Yes.
Yes. And then also, have you learned a lot about golf? Do you know which clubs they need?
Yes. So, like, for instance, a lot of times, unless it's a par three, which is a par three, if they try to tee off straight to the green, usually if it's a par four or par five, they'll start off with the driver, which is the biggest club. And then after that, usually if it's one of the longer holes, like if it's like 250 or more yards away from the putting green, they'll usually use a wood. And then going into like 200 to 150 yards, they'll usually use an iron, like a maybe an 8-9 iron. And then usually if they're like near the green, either they'll use a putter if it's more flat towards the green, or they'll call what they call a bump and run using a wedge.
Okay. And you know what these all are now. So if they, you know what they need.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Have you learned to play golf too? Do you play?
I do not particularly play. I sometimes play, like, for instance, like when it comes to caddying, one thing that I'll do is I like to play as a hobby there. Mm. It's very, very rare that I do. They've only let me do it like twice, like while I'm caddying, like, but it's pretty fun. I think I'm bad at the sport, so don't think I'm good at the sport at all. I do not play it as a sport or anything like that, but I have done it before. I've caddied, like some golfers like let me use their clubs and things like that before, mm-hmm. A couple of times, which was really, really fun. So I have played before, and I think it is an interesting sport.
What's your favorite part about being a golf caddy?
My favorite part about being a golf caddy, because I specifically caddy for Scioto Country Club, my favorite part is making connections and making relationships to the golfers. One thing I will say is that I caddy at a very social club. So what that means is, like, we don't just grab their bags and then just do all 18 holes and we're done. Most of the times they're asking you about what you do outside of caddying, what you do inside of high school, what sports you play. Do you have any siblings? Ask about your family. If you want to apply to the Evans Scholarship, why? And what colleges you want to go to? They'll ask you so many questions. And then I also do that back because I am a social person. I ask about their careers. What college did they go to? Mm. What did they major in? Or what, even where are they from? Mm. Like that, you can talk about anything. I feel like it can go from, like I said, those conversations all the way to them talking about a knee replacement because they're mostly older. So yeah, it could be about anything.
Did your caddying career take you to any tournaments? Did you get to like Muirfield or something like that?
Even though I didn't go to the Muirfield Memorial Tournament this mm-hmm. year, Scioto Country Club, they do host a lot of their own tournaments. Like for instance, I just caddied for the men's member tournament there. So I do caddy for a lot of the Scioto tournaments and things of that sort. So yes.
Have you met any famous golfers?
Or
famous locally?
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was about to say, one person that I do know of, I'm not for sure of his first name, I'm so sorry, but I do know his last name is Pierre. He is a French male. He was a friend of Joseph Murray. And even though I did not personally caddy for him, he was in my group when I was caddying yesterday. And he is on national television. He's in a specific group that's like for people that were like former presidents and things of that sort. He's been played internationally, things of that sort. So I have met someone that is like international, like plays like really, really well. He was playing the course, and for him to be a guest his first time playing, he's all the way from France. Mm-hmm. So.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and this hour is Fascinating Ohio Teen Edition. We're talking with teenagers who do amazing things, and with us now is Mickey Phillips, who works as a golf caddy while attending high school. Now, historically, golf is not known for its diversity. So as a young woman of color, how do you feel being immersed in golf culture?
I think being inside of golf culture, I'm going to talk about two sides. One, I'll talk about caddying just itself, and then two, I'll talk about specifically how I feel being a part of the Caddy Academy part. Mm-hmm. I'll start off with just the golfing side. Just the golfing side, it doesn't feel different. It feels different, but not negatively. It feels different in a positive way. Because one thing golfers will always ask me is where I'm from around in Columbus. Mm-hmm. One thing I always say is, even though I was raised here mostly like from Linden area, which is near the Ohio State Fair, which is, you know, a little bit of a lower community compared to like Dublin or Upper Arlington. Mm-hmm. My family is from Augusta, Georgia. Like my mm-hmm. mother's from there. My grandfather's from there. Everyone else is from there. And then we're originated from Nigeria. So I think that's so amazing to talk about. And then they're amazed because I do know facts about Nigeria, tribe of Yoruba. And then I also do know things that we have, like traditions that we have inside of southern Georgia. Like, for instance, cheesy grits. That's a breakfast food. So
everybody loves cheesy grits.
Yeah. So I definitely think that it's amazing because I get to talk about my diversity and I get to talk about where I'm from. Do you feel out of place at first at times? Yes, you definitely can. One, not just being someone of color, because there will be times where I am the only person of color inside of my group, but also being a female, because sometimes I can be, and a lot of times I can be the only female in the group. But at the same time, it also is really, really, like I said, it's empowering, because at Scioto, I am only one of three girls that double back. And the three girls, even though, because they have their own lives, obviously, so they're not there a lot. I've not seen a female double bagger yet, and it's empowering to know that I am doing something amazing that a lot of other people, females don't. So I want to push them forward to be able to double bag, which is something that a lot of the boys do at Scioto, so they can do it as well, because to let them know, like, you can do anything, if not mostly anything, that anybody else can.
I love that. Girl power. Yeah, you
and
got
then,
it.
Thanks. And then for WGA side, it feels nice because they always talk about, especially because WGA or Caddy Academy, it is a lot more women. Like, most of our branches are girls. And then we do have a men's national branch in Chicago. It's very nice because 90% of WGA participants are of color or of some type of minority descent of some kind. I think it's really important because WGA, what they do is that they push that diversity into the golfing world. That's what they want to do. And I think that's what they try to realize to other golfers is like, hey, obviously we all know the fact that golfing isn't diverse. They want you to not feel out of place. They want you to feel that if you feel out of place, you feel out of place in a positive way. And I feel like Caddy Academy or WGA Caddy Academy really makes you, makes you feel welcome to accept the fact of who you are and not feel out of place on a golf course.
I should have asked this earlier, but do you know how much does a golf bag weigh? So how much are you carrying? How many pounds?
Usually a golf bag weighs, like, usually for a men's golf bag, because they carry more stuff. usually they're about around 50 pounds and then 45 to 50 pounds. And usually a women's bag, because they are lighter, usually 35 to 45 pounds, no more than 45 usually.
So if you're carrying two, you're carrying 100 pounds.
Yeah, just about 80 to 100 pounds, yes.
Wow, you're strong. All right.
Thanks.
Okay, so you've reached a point in your life probably where every adult asks you this, but do you have plans for what you plan to do after high school?
Yes, I do. So I decided that I would like to go to JCU or John Carroll University for college right after high school, and that's because, one, they are Evan Scholar's partner as of January 2025, and they also are a Crystal Ray partner for us, not just Columbus, but also a national Crystal Ray partner. And I would like to undergrad in business and marketing, government or politics or political science, as most people call it, or forensic sciences. I would double major and choose two out of three of those majors to eventually would like to go to law school to become an attorney. I would like to get the Evans Scholarship. That is my top choice.
So you mentioned this a couple of times. Tell me, what is the Evans Scholarship?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought you guys knew. I'm sorry.
For everyone. Yeah.
The Evans Scholarship. So Caddy Academy has a couple of goals, but the main goal, like the whole point of doing Caddy Academy, is to get the Evans Scholarship. Caddy Academy, the Evans Scholarship is for any high school and sometimes college freshmen. It's a full ride tuition with free housing to 28 different colleges of your choice. Most of the time in state, and then we have seven to eight national university private schools. Some of those schools could be University of Chicago, Purdue, Ohio State, John Carroll, Notre Dame, Northwestern, schools of that sort. You can look on the website at evansscholars.org. And what WGA Caddy Academy does is that they give us the opportunity to caddy, and geographically you don't have access to a golf course, so they choose participants that don't have that access, so they can stay on a campus or usually inside of the Evans Scholarship House for 7 weeks so they can go caddy, because outside of those 7 weeks, most of the time they don't have access to the golf course. Mm. That's what WJ Caddy Academy does. And then to eventually get the Evans Scholarship, which it was, if you usually have about 100 to 150 loops out of 2 years or more of caddying inside of high school. And what it does is it's an academic scholarship. So most of the time you have around a B average 3.0 GPA. Mm-hmm. And also those who have financial need based under some circumstances.
Yeah, one of your fellow students who's also a caddy got this scholarship. Are you hoping to follow in his footsteps?
Yes, his name is Chris. he's in the class before me, class of 2025. Congratulations to him, and very proud of him, and I'm pretty sure Krista Ray is too, and his parents and everyone else. He was the first Evans Scholar out of Krista Ray Columbus High School. That would be the first time that Evans Scholarship was awarded to a Krista Ray Columbus High School student. I hope to become the second.
Number two.
I would like to not. He went to Notre Dame. I'm not a person who is very interested in Notre Dame, just for me, because I like a smaller school and I'm hoping to look inside of in-state. But yes, definitely to follow inside of his footsteps and hopefully to go to John Carroll, become Evans Scholars.
We've talked a lot about, what you hope to do in the future and about golf caddying. Are you involved in any other like clubs or anything else you do in high school? Because I know high school students tend to be involved in a lot.
Yes. One thing I would say that I'm very involved in is my school. That's the biggest thing. Like, for instance, my mom, when I first went to or applied to Krista Ray, my mom, she said one thing that she wanted, she said that would be good was to be proactive. Not to be proactive, to build up a resume, to be proactive in what I love. So I am involved in some sports to start off with. I'm involved in basketball as a senior. This will be my third year in basketball. I've done cheerleading before, and I've done tennis. Those were three sports I played as a kid from Columbus Recreation Centers and Parks, so I decided to continue that on after COVID. I also did a couple of clubs. I was vice president of UNICEF Club for this past year at my school. I was also in science club and arts club in my freshman year. And I also am very proud and big ambassador for my school. So I do take pictures a lot. As you can see, I do a lot of interviews. Yeah. To really talk about and show that school spirit, to be proud of, to show the fact that I am a Krista Ray Columbus High School student wherever I go. And I am a part of my family from wherever I go. So I'm a very big, proud ambassador. And outside of school, I go to Dwell or Zenas Community Church, their high school / youth church.
I don't know how you have time to golf caddy with all these other things you're doing. So do you think that, you know, big picture in your life, do you think you'll keep being a golf caddy for a while, or is this something that you're enjoying besides the other benefits you get?
I would definitely say both. I say I do enjoy it because there are a lot of benefits. You do get paid as a caddy, and like I said, it is, you get the extra experience in Caddy Academy. I'll speak about that in a little bit of a second. You also do get the Evans Scholarship, which I was talking about. But I do plan on caddying for summers, because, you know, for summers you do come back home.
Yeah.
I would like to continue to caddy at Scioto Country Club and maybe other clubs after high school if I do become an Evans Scholar. And even if I don't, there's still so much enjoyment to caddying. With the short amount of time and just the socializations that you get.
We've been talking with Western Golf Association Caddy Academy member, Mikayla Phillips. Thank you so much for being here today, Mickey.
Thank you so much.
And coming up on Fascinating Ohio, the teen edition, we're going to be talking to a young birder who was recently named the Young Birder of the Year by the American Birding Association. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. we get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And this is Fascinating Ohio, a show from All Sides where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. This week, we have the teen edition of Fascinating Ohio, and we're introducing you to three teenagers doing amazing things. At just 13 years old, Gehanna birder Killian Sullivan has spotted nearly 700 birds from all over the country. He runs the blog Buckeye Birding, where he documents his finds, teaches classes on birding to Columbus residents, and creates digital art on what he spots. And all of these achievements earned him the title of Young Birder of the Year by the American Birding Association. And today we're going to talk with Killian about his hobby and what's next. Welcome to All Sides, Killian.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So where did your fascination with birds start? When did it begin?
Yeah, so my family and I were out on a trip in California. We're a really big rock climbing family. Mm-hmm. And we were walking back to our campground one day, and there were these blue and black birds that were just so noisy, very social. And I kind of just fell in love with figuring out what they were and watching them. They ended up being Steller's Jays. Mm. And then I just remember on the way home, you know, already working on my birthday list, binoculars, field guide, field notebook.
What you needed to be a birder. So seeing these one birds fascinated you, and you were like, I think I might be into this.
Yeah, so for birders, that's called a spark bird, you know, the one bird that sparks your interest into the hobby.
Oh, I love that, spark bird. So I want to congratulate you on winning Young Birder of the Year. How did it feel to get that title?
Thank you. Yeah, so one of my biggest birding mentors, Jen Brumfield, probably one of the biggest birders, best birders in the country. She won the award when she was a kid, so ever since I learned that, you know, it's always been one of my goals. And then, obviously, I put a ton of work into the project, so to see that that paid off, that was really great.
Is it something you had to apply to? Like, did you, like, put in an application to be Young Birder of the Year?
No, you have to compete in five different projects, so that's field notebook, conservation and community leadership, photography, illustration, and writing are the ones that you can choose from.
Okay, all right. Which one did you compete? Did you do them all, or is it one
in particular? Yeah, so the first year I did all of them, and then this year I did conservation and community leadership, and that was teaching the birding classes at Grange Insurance Audubon Center. And then I did photography and digital art for illustration. And then for writing, I was super lucky to have most of my writing published in some different magazines.
Wow. Okay. And yeah, I did look on your blog, and you know, you list all the birds you've seen on there, but then you list these classes. What is it like to teach a class? Are you teaching adults or other kids?
There was a big range of ages there for sure. Mostly adults, I would say. We did have a few kids, which was great to see. But it was obviously super fun to teach them. And it was great to, you know, be able to share all my knowledge. And, you know, like I mentioned about mentors earlier, two of my really big mentors right now are James Muller and Ben Warner. And I don't think that that one Steller's Jay that I mentioned would have been enough to keep me into birding if it wasn't for them, you know, teaching me everything and, you know, always keeping me interested in it. So I think that now I have the ability to share my knowledge with others and spark their interest into birding is great.
You know, birds are finicky creatures. They can be hard to spot.
They're
not trying to make themselves known usually.
Yeah, no.
What's your strategy when you're looking for a bird?
So if I'm looking for a specific bird that maybe I don't know everything about it, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology has a site called eBird. Mm-hmm. And you can put in any species in the world, and they'll give you, like, sightings for those that people have seen recently. So, you know, maybe I'll see, like, I'm looking for a salt marsh sparrow. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, you would need to go to the Atlantic coast. Edwin B. Forsyth National Wildlife Refuge would be a good place, and, you know, I've seen recent sightings there for them. So, you know, once I'm there, then maybe I look up the habitat that that bird would like, which is, you know, marshes, and then, you know, really just looking around that habitat, making sure I'm there at the right time of day.
Hmm. So if there's a bird that you want to find, you have to basically go on the other birding websites to see where people have found one recently?
Yeah, sometimes, not always though. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you'll just be out birding and you'll stumble across something, so.
Now, according to your blog, you've documented almost 700 birds, 699 to be exact. Okay. So I would think, I mean, I don't know because I'm not a birder, but I would think that once you get up in those several hundreds, it's harder to grow your list. Is that true?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So, do you have a particular bird that you're hoping to be your 700th bird?
There's a few that, you know, I think would be super cool. Great gray owl, which is the largest owl in North America, would definitely be really cool. I mean, I'd have to go to Minnesota for that. Mm. Spruce grouse, which is, you know, like a weird chicken bird, I guess. I could get those in the UP, maybe in Michigan. And then the one that I think would be just absolutely amazing is the Steller sea eagle. It's a bird usually found in, you know, Russia and Japan. But a few years ago, one crossed the Bering Sea and was seen in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then a huge cold front moved through the U.S. And the bird was spotted all the way down in Texas. And then it worked its way up into Maine, where it was seen for a few years in the winter. And then it would spend its summer in Newfoundland, where it is now. And it hasn't been back to Maine in a few years. So, you know, Newfoundland's not the most affordable thing, but it'd be pretty awesome.
That sounds like a very confused bird. Does that bird not know where to go? This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and this is the teen edition of Fascinating Ohio. We're talking about the logistics of birding with Young Birder of the Year, Killian Sullivan. Do you have a favorite bird?
Yeah, Carolina Wren.
Okay. What makes, why that one?
They just have a ton of personality, and they look so mad and cute at the same time.
And they're here in Ohio, so we can see them anytime.
Yeah, they're in my backyard all the time.
Okay, so your favorite bird is one you can see most often rather than having. Do you have a favorite kind of rare bird that's hard to spot?
Montezuma quail in Arizona. It's another one of those like weird round chicken birds, but they've got really cool like black and white patterning on their belly and cool facial patterns. But definitely a lot sulkier and harder to spot. And I'd have to go to, you know, South Texas or southeastern Arizona to see that one.
So I'm thinking that for an adult birder, they can travel wherever they want. If they hear about a bird they want to find, they can drive and go see it. But I'm thinking you have to involve your family, don't you?
Oh, yeah. So my dad pretty much drives me everywhere. So, you know, this.
I think I read that your dad said that you kind of set up an itinerary and he just follows.
Yeah, sometimes that seems to be the theme, I guess.
So where is your dad taking you to look for your birds?
Pretty much all around the country. I've been super lucky to travel as much as I have. I've been to 49 out of the 50 states, so that's incredible.
Wow. Which state are you missing?
Alaska.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that one bird you want could be back in Alaska, the confused bird?
Yeah, maybe on like one of those like Aleutian Islands or one of the ones in the Bering Sea.
Are you begging your dad to take you to Alaska?
Yeah, I definitely would like to go one day.
So not only do you have almost 700 birds on your list, but then a lot of people love having 50 states on their list. Mm-hmm. So you've accomplished a lot. You're only 13, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so you traveled to Arizona. You also traveled to one of my favorite places, Cape May, New Jersey.
Oh, cool. Is there
good birding in Cape May?
Yeah, absolutely. The Cape May Bird Observatory puts on a birding festival every year in the spring and fall to highlight the migration of different birds as they travel back and forth between their breeding and non-breeding grounds. Mm. So I've been out there for their fall migration, and I had a great time, you know, picking through shorebirds and stuff, which, you know, as the name would suggest, they like to be right along the shore looking for different food in the sand.
Now, when we talked to you to book this interview, you were at 691 birds.
Yes.
And now you're at 699. So yep. Where did you go in the past couple of weeks to get 8 more birds?
Yeah, so there was a South American gull spotted nesting in Wisconsin, which is insane. So I went up to...
Is that, that's not where it's supposed to be?
Oh,
is
no.
Is that what you mean? Okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be in South America right now, but it's nesting in Milwaukee.
Another confused bird. Okay, got it. Got it.
So I drove up to Milwaukee, and we got the kelp gull there. And then recently, I just got back from a trip out in Oregon. My older brother had climbing nationals out there. Mm-hmm. And me and my dad did some birding while we were out there. And we got... a bird like sooty grouse, another one of those weird chicken birds. and then some cool warblers, which are small songbirds, and then calliope hummingbird, which is the smallest bird in North America.
Okay. So do you travel with your dad a lot? Does he have a bird list now too? Or does he just like go along for the ride?
Oh no, he's definitely into it too. Okay. I think it started like that, but he definitely is into birding now as well.
Okay. Have you ever been to the Toledo area? They have what's called the biggest week in American birding there.
Yeah, I love going to that festival. It's the biggest festival in the country and maybe even the world. Mm-hmm. It's also the warbler capital of the world, which is really cool. And as I mentioned, there are these small songbirds that migrate some as far south as South America to northern Canada every year.
Now, if you're going toward having 700 birds on your list, like, because you're at 699, I honestly, like, I don't know how big a list can be, because I don't know how many species of birds there are. I mean, what, do we just keep going?
Yeah, I think just for the rest of my life, keep seeing as many as I can.
Yeah, do you know famous birders, how many birds they have on their list?
I mean, 700 is considered, like, the gold standard, I guess, but... there are some birders that I know in the U.S. that have a life list that's, you know, just over 900 species, which is insane.
Okay. Now, you live in Gahanna. Yeah. Are you in middle school, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what do your friends think? Because I have to think you may be one of the few birders at your middle school.
Yeah, my middle school for sure. You know, they definitely don't make fun of it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll play, like, Guess My Bird with me, so we'll get on... you know, like Cornell Labs of Ornithology's website, and then they'll like look up a bird, and then I'll have to like guess what it is. So they definitely like it, and they like hearing about all my adventures and chases.
Whenever you're just you know, hanging out with them and you're outside, or if you're like at, you know, lunchtime at school, do they all go, "Hey, what's that bird? What's that bird?"
Absolutely. Yeah.
They have you spot them. Have you spot them, and you're like, "That's just a sparrow." Is that what you're saying? Okay, so you teach classes and you also do art. Tell me a little bit about the art you do.
Yeah, so I use Adobe Illustrator. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've made, you know, some art of like one family of birds. So I've done terns and wrens. Wrens are my favorite family of birds. And then I also wrote an article about the 5 most endangered species in the continental U.S. Mm-hmm. So I made some digital art for those species.
And you mentioned earlier that a part of getting Young Birder of the Year was your focus on conservation. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that. Are you trying to help save bird habitats?
Yeah, that was one of the things I worked on. So at the Grange Insurance Audubon Center, mm-hmm. they have this restoration project that they're working on, and I helped do bio surveys there and then, you know, rip out invasive species and plant native ones.
And you said you were teaching classes. Are you still teaching classes at the Grange, or is that something you did before?
Not currently, no, but we might start them again.
Yeah. So tell me about what was a typical class like? Were you teaching them how to be a bird spotter, or were you walking around the Grange, like that kind of thing?
It was more teaching them for sure. So the first class was sort of just like an intro to mm-hmm. birding, and then after that, there was one about how to use all the resources, like the eBird app that I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. And then one about, like, anatomy and plumage, so, like, the different parts of birds, their beak, their supercilium, which is, like, their eyebrow. And then at the end, we put it all together with sparrows and warblers, which are two sort of challenging families.
Can you recognize a bird by its sound, or do you have to see it, too?
I can probably do like a few hundred species by sound, but definitely not all the ones I've seen.
Oh, just a few hundred, right? Okay. and then do you feel like people who are new to birding, do they need any particular equipment? Do you need binoculars, or can you just do it with your eye?
I mean, you can definitely do it with your eyes. I think binoculars are a huge help. You don't need to have them, but I think that they're definitely helpful.
All right. So what's next? Getting this 700th bird, is that next on your list?
Yeah.
All right, are you going to travel anywhere else this summer before school starts?
I mean, we'll see if I can get up to the Upper Peninsula, but we haven't decided anything yet.
Okay. And being Young Birder of the Year, is that a title that you just always hold? Do they pick a new Young Birder every year?
They pick a new Young Birder every year. But, like, I'll get to keep the, like, 2025 ABA Young Birder of the Year.
Well, congratulations on that award. And I hope you get your 700th bird real soon.
Thank
so
you.
That you can, I think that would probably, would that make you feel relieved to be like, finally, 700?
Yeah.
Well, we have been talking to Young Birder of the Year, Killian Sullivan. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Fascinating Ohio, the Teen Edition, from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And I'm Amy Jurevich.